Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervey, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. I really don't like that line. Do you, Lauren? Should we change it? I've been saying
line.
It for 8 years.
Yeah. What don't you like about it?
It's just stupid.
What?
I'm not managing anyone's life. I can't even manage my own life.
Well, I didn't want to say it, but yeah, false advertising to a
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I what can a lawyer do?
You can litigate.
I can litigate. It's a lot of hot air that I have, but at the same time, I can't really help anybody. I have some good advice sometimes, but I think people have to like dig deep down and figure out how to get out of problems themselves.
Wow, you've really done a 180 since our last show, haven't you?
Yeah.
You used to be the
person authority.
Everybody leans on.
Yeah.
It's going to help you.
Yeah, I have
get
no
your
way,
life
I have
together.
No arrogance anymore.
Now, what happened in 180?
It's Lauren Savon, and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me yet again.
Oh, I always have you. It's just a pleasure. I have to tell you, we were talking before we went on the air today, and we are so privileged to follow Frank Motek on
yes.
Motek on Business.
Huge fan.
The show is great. And mm-hmm. for those of you who are just like listening because you listen to the station to hear Frank, I understand that. We aren't as smart as Frank.
No.
And we don't know business like he does.
Definitely
we can't
not.
Talk about the stock market or anything else that's going on in the world. And there's lots going on like he can. But the guy's such a nice guy.
He has the most glorious radio voice. So he almost sounds like a robot.
You have
like
a
you
good
can't
voice.
Imagine. Well, thank you, Alan. You can't imagine sounds that there's like, a human behind it. And
yeah.
then you meet him and he's the nicest
yeah.
guy.
Is it possible to be that nice?
I mean, I don't know him well enough to know if he's always this nice. He's been nothing but nice whenever I've had
yeah.
encounters with him. And
yeah.
I've heard only wonderful things about him. What if you and I do a little deep dive and see if we can find a dark side.
I don't think there is, really. I mean, so many hosts of this on this station
yeah.
have just been like total jerks to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
I've been doing the show for a long time.
I want to hear names.
They don't even talk to me. They walk out. They finish their show. They
can
leave.
Can I guess who?
Yeah, of course you can. Go ahead.
Is it John Phillips?
I like John. He doesn't talk to me, but I
is
like
it?
Him. He's been on our show. And I think he's a really good guy.
He is a good guy.
But I think one of the guys I think you worked with.
Is it Judd Gunn?
I never heard of Judd Gunn.
Judd Dunning? really? Was it Dr. Drew?
I'm not going to say.
Was it?
Maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
He's really nice.
Okay.
I'm surprised to hear that.
Okay.
I really am. Like he's
I guess
nice
I'm just
to
not,
a
I'm
fault.
Just not good enough. That's all. Lawyers just don't cut it with doctors.
Maybe you caught him on an off day.
Well, I didn't talk sex or anything like that.
Well, that would be weird, no.
But isn't that his forte?
Well, he's a medical doctor.
No, but he had that show.
Yeah, he had a lot of shows.
About sex and
sure.
about alcohol and everything. And,
yeah.
you know, I'm just not an authority on either.
Well.
Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
now that we know who made the...
Who made the list? Well, there's a couple of others. Jillian Barbary has always been great.
Wonderful.
She's a very friendly. She's not like Frank, of course, but she's pretty friendly.
She's one of the
yeah.
my favorite.
And I know
people.
You're,
yeah.
You go way back.
Oh, I
with
love
her.
Her. Yeah, absolutely.
So you've been watching the Olympics.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
I have a few crushes.
Who's that?
Oh, Caleb, the swimmer that just won.
Ledecky? You
no,
have a crush on
Ledecky.
Katie Ledecky?
I mean, she's fantastic too, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Did
you grow up watching the Olympics?
I guess. It was just the thing that everybody watched every 4 years.
Yeah,
I watched the Olympics.
Well, I was explaining to my kids a couple days ago that I learned all about countries and flags, and I urged them to memorize. So we did a whole thing because they're only 7 and 8 years old, and they start looking at flags and saying, you know, who's from Australia, and
right.
Germany, and, of course they know Canada because they're Canadian.
But then things get really confusing sometimes.
It gets confusing, especially when you talk about the Russian Olympic
yeah.
deal, you know.
All of the former
ROC.
Soviet
yeah.
states, yeah.
But, you know, they really have taken a liking to it. And I think it's part of, you know, our lineage here to, I used to, as a small kid in Canada, I spent hours and hours watching. And I watch sports. Like, we have two people on our show today. And, you know, we talk about kayaking, canoeing. And I was big, I was a big fan of rowing, kayaking, and canoeing.
Sure.
Maybe not the slalom. We'll talk about the slalom with them. But I love the races. I love that cool noise when they start the race.
Incredible,
you know how it goes?
Watch.
Do you know the noise that I'm talking about?
Can you reenact it for us?
And then the race starts.
Right.
And then when they finish, you hear...
Mm.
So that's the finish of the race.
Wow.
And yeah, so I loved it. And I'm a huge fan of track and field. Looking forward to this year's track and field action. Mm-hmm. Always been into the running, four by one and everything. But there's so many controversies this year.
Oh my goodness. There's so many. I don't know where to begin. We have so much to talk about.
Let's bring on our guests because they probably will have something to say. We'll have a little round table. They know each other well because they're married to each other, but they're former Olympians, and we are going to talk to... And how's your French, by the way?
Horrible.
Horrible, really?
Merde.
What is that?
It's bad in French.
So how can you, we can say it in English or we can say it in French. I'm sure he's used to it. He's a French slalom canoeist, former French slalom canoeist, Thierry Humeau.
Hmm.
It wasn't great, but wasn't terrible. But I'm sure people call him Thierry Humeau.
Well,
but I'm not going to do that.
Us.
Thierry. And we have Thierry, who won a number of different medals at Canoe Slalom World Championships and was in the Olympics in 1992 in Barcelona, finished eighth in the C1, which is a slalom canoe competition. And also Donna Chlodek, not sure how to say that, that's Czechoslovakian, by the way. Do you speak Czech?
No. I mean, I should, but I don't.
Okay.
Two languages that I'm awful at. Welcome.
Well, they know languages because, you know, obviously Europeans know way more than Americans and Canadians do when it comes to language. And Donna was a slalom kayaker. She competed in two Summer Olympics, won two medals in the K1 event, a silver in 1996 in Atlanta and a bronze in 1992 in Barcelona. And she won six medals at the World Championships in the K1 team events and individual events. excuse me. She currently is coaching the Potomac Whitewater Racing Center in the Washington, D.C. area. The couple met in Italy in 1986 and married in 1989, have two beautiful daughters. I want to welcome you to the show, Thierry and Donna. Welcome to Gervais Law.
Yeah, we're glad to be on the show. Thanks, Alan.
Do you guys know when to speak? Because it's going to be hard. We don't want you to speak on top of each other, but, you know, you've known each other for so many years. I hope, you know,
have a rhythm.
Do you have a rhythm?
Yeah, we can find a rhythm.
They say it at the same time. You know, we want to ask you because it takes so much to be Olympic athletes. And we're seeing that, and it's being really emphasized in these Olympics. And we're going to talk a little bit about Simone Biles a little bit later. But do you see how it has been so much pressure and so much stress when you were in the competitions, canoeing and kayaking? And I know, Donna, you said that getting through the mental demons to perform at your best under that kind of pressure is what the Olympic experience is about. How did you guys handle it?
Thierry, do you want to go first?
Yeah, okay. So the big problem with the Olympics is that it's every 4 years, so it's a lot of time to wait.
Right.
If you didn't qualify for the Olympics, for the next Olympics, you know, it's such a long period of time. 4 years, it's a lot of time for us. It's a lot of training. It's a lot of sacrifices. And naturally, that puts more pressure on the Olympics. So there's always more pressure on the Olympics than a World Championships or a World Cup or any other race.
And so, you know, there was so much pressure this year to get the Olympics back on track. Obviously, they had to postpone 2020. What's it like for an athlete? Because people are now wondering, was that even a good idea? Couldn't we have waited till 2022? You know, right now, Tokyo's under a state of emergency. They're reporting over 3,000 new cases daily now. So, but for an athlete, I would assume waiting another year is probably a very big deal.
Yeah, and, but you know, the problem with the Olympics is that since the back in 1984 with the LA Games, it has become a huge machine. You know, it's, we're talking about 11,000 athletes, 53 disciplines, 400 events, 200 more, over 200 countries. And this is probably the largest public event ever held. And having such a big machine in place, it's almost unstoppable. You know, so I'm actually surprised that last year they managed to cancel it. But you know, the Japanese really wanted their games this year, and it was like I think it was unstoppable in some ways. Mm. So you know, the games are on. I think the athletes are happy because they are the first one who would have been kind of disappointed if they didn't have their race, and the life goes on.
You know, Donna, you're actively involved with training young people, and you're seeing firsthand what the pandemic has done in terms of training. Are the future Olympians and others who maybe don't make it to the Olympics, are they getting frustrated, or how are they able to stand their course to try to get to the levels that you and Terry did?
Well, we are very, very fortunate with this pandemic situation compared to other sports. Our sport is exclusively outdoors. Mm. And, you know, we all know as far as, and it's also not a sport where we're in each other's, this isn't wrestling or, you know, we're not in each other's general peripheral space. So you can perform this sport safely. Even last year during the pandemic, there were no events, but the kids were out kayaking every day. On the river is the safest place to be. There's no one around. I remember I would try to go running along the river and there were tons of people. It was like, oh, I have nowhere to run. But you'd get on the river and you have miles and miles of air and empty space. So we're very fortunate in that kayaking is an outdoor sport done alone, one person in a boat. And so we've been able to paddle this whole time. And I'd actually think the kayaking in the U.S. has increased. All the kayak schools are reporting double-digit growth because this is a sport that you can do really well outdoors in a safe way. So we're very fortunate in that way. But, yes, I think for a lot of the athletes, you know, the swimming, the indoor sports, it's been a really tough adjustment. There was a lot of people training alone in their basements, you know, just trying to stay physically fit for quite a long time.
Right.
So it was a tough year for everybody last year, but I think we were one of the ones that, you know, were able to be quite fortunate in the end.
And the other thing that we haven't mentioned, but we'll talk about, we have to take a break, but when you don't have spectators necessarily at the venue, it becomes a little difficult, I would think, for a lot of these athletes, even though they're competing against themselves and against others. The cheer of the crowd and also the support of their country, the fellow country persons who are watching, motivate, and they're not getting that. So there's a lot to talk about. We got to take a break. You're listening to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yeah, there's something magical to hearing that music as Lauren is texting. Do you know what this music is, Lauren?
The name of the piece? No.
Do you know what it symbolizes?
Yeah. The Olympics.
The Olympics. What a topic to talk about tonight on a legal show. I don't know how much law is involved, but there are certain issues, of course. And we're fortunate to have with us two former Olympians, Thierry Humeau and Donna Chlodek. And they are involved in the canoeing and kayaking. And it's slalom canoeing and slalom kayaking. Donna, why don't you tell us what slalom kayaking is, just for people who may not, they may have seen it on TV, but not sure what exactly it is.
Well, I do want to say the finals of the men's kayak are going to be happening tonight in Japan. So if you turn on tomorrow morning, you'll get to see the men's kayak competition, semifinals and finals. So whitewater canoe slalom is kind of like ski slalom, but on a river. So if you imagine a whitewater river, anyone who's gone rafting might, you know, have some idea, with rapids, eddies behind rocks, and holes where the water goes over rocks and makes white, frothy, exciting, fun things. And you have gates strung over the water, typically somewhere between 20 to 25 gates. And you go down kind of like a skier between the gates. One difference compared to skiing is we also have upstream gates. And upstream gates, you go back up through them. They are red when you look on the course. Downstream gates are green. So you're going to go down through some gates, kind of zigzagging, and then you're going to have an upstream gate behind a rock that you go upstream through it. And the whole course is about 100 seconds long. If you touch the gates, you have time added on. And if you miss a gate, you have 50 seconds added on. So if you miss a gate, you're completely out of the event.
Wow.
And so it's, you know, it's a strength and skill, very technical. You have to have very good edges, very good control in all the different rapids.
You know, my son and I were watching the other night, and he had a question. He's only 8 years old, and he said, is that a man-made pool that they are kayaking in? Or is it part of a river, lake? What is it? Because we could see the sidelines. And I gave him an answer. I want to see if I'm correct. So one of you, tell us how the venue is put together for kayaking and canoeing.
So since the 92 Olympics, since the discipline was reintroduced in the Games, every single venue has been completely built artificially. So you're seeing like basically 100% artificial river, and basically starts with a lake and a drop of maybe 10 to 20 feet drop, and you have pumps that circulate the water back to the lake, and then it goes from the lake down the whitewater course. And so it's a very short section of a river. As Dana mentioned, the race is only 100 seconds, so it would be like a small rapid or a mid-sized rapid on the river. But they're trying to reproduce the same kind of difficulties you would find on the natural river. But although, you know, being artificial, it can never be the same. And also you're limited by the cost of the installation, the length of the river, and how much water you can really pump into the course.
Right.
That's incredible that they just build it from scratch.
Yeah, and actually that was my answer. It wasn't done as eloquently as Terry just said, but I basically told my son that. Let's jump into some of these issues here, because I'm sure both Terry and Donna have some opinions.
Yeah, well, especially for Olympians who have medaled, and for, you know, for folks like you that have done the work and made it to the Olympics, you know, there's so much talk today about the women's gymnastics team from the U.S., and particularly Simone Biles, who decided, you know, not to compete after she had, you know, let's say a rough routine the other day. And a lot of people have come out and said, you know, it's very brave of her to realize that her mental health comes first. And then a lot of people, I'm sure, were upset that she didn't compete for America and decided to sit out instead. You know, I don't know. It's a really complicated issue for me, because on the one hand, yeah, if you don't think that you're going to be able to do this, if you think it poses a danger to you in whatever capacity, of course, don't compete. But on the other hand, as an Olympian, I would think pressure is part of the job, and that's just something that goes along with it. It's what you sign up for, right? What are your opinions on it?
Well, I think gymnastics in particular, you do have a safety issue, which you may not have in a sport like 100-meter dash, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't feel well, if you are starting to get discombobulated in the air in gymnastics, you can get badly hurt.
Right.
And I think there was, you know, we don't know exactly, but confidence matters so much in sport, you know, how you're feeling that week, that month, how you're coming into it. So confidence and feeling comfortable in your skin as you're doing the training. And I think it's particular to sports like gymnastics or figure skating, where you're really doing depth-defying tricks. So I think there's a large part that we don't, as spectators, even understand what went into her decision. I'm sure it wasn't made lightly. I'm sure it wasn't like, oh, I don't feel like it today. You know, she may have lost a lot of confidence. She had some bad practices. And feeling, I can't imagine the stress of going into an event feeling like I could go out of this in a wheelchair if mm-hmm. if I break my back. So I think that there's so much that we don't know that it's hard to say, oh no, you signed up for this, right? So it's tough to judge.
But you know, let's ask Terry that you, Terry, have been involved in TV and film production. You've gone all over the world, some very tough areas, war zones for humanitarian causes. You've been reporting and doing camera work for National Geographic TV, Al Jazeera, and some really difficult places. That's your job, and I know you thrive on it. Isn't that what an athlete's supposed to be about? And I'm not making any comment on Simone at all. But at the same time, there are so many dangerous situations in all sports. I mean, if it's a football player running up the middle into a 6'4", 260-pound middle linebacker, or in baseball facing a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, if your head isn't right, you can get injured in almost anything.
Look at the pileup at the Tour de France when some onlooker jumped in front of the lane with a sign.
So I think, Donna, your points are well taken, but it does beg the question how you separate what the sport you're supposed to be doing as a trained professional, and in this case, non-professional, but athlete, versus a mental health issue. And I don't want to make a comment on that because I know there's a lot of background, especially with Simone. But again, you have to be able to weigh the two, and maybe we can't do it. But Terry, what is your perspective on, you know, competing, even if you're not doing your best and you're representing your country?
So I'm actually glad you brought up my professional life, because after I transitioned to the Olympics, I realized how much of a bubble it is. The Olympics is a big bubble. I mean, what all you have to care when you're an Olympic athlete is your performance. Everything is centered on you, on your person, on your performance, on the upcoming race. And I think, you know, it puts the athletes in a bit of a robotic situation. So everybody expects, you know, the athlete to always work. You push the button, the Olympics happen, they're going to do the race. And, you know, once in a while, it doesn't work. And, you know, that Simone Biles, she came in with a saying, like, you know, she mentioned, she said, like, I am more than my accomplishments. You know, a few weeks ago, there was a scandal with the track and field American athlete was tested positive for marijuana.
Right.
She simply replied, I am human. So, you know, so the 11,000 athletes who are competing at the Olympics, they are not all robots. And I think sometimes, you know, something happened and you just cannot act as a machine, and you're deprogrammed and you're not, things are not going to happen the way they were supposed to be.
Do you guys think, though, that there in this generation in particular, there's a different kind of feeling when it comes to mental health, when it comes to having your head in the game? You know, for example, I mean, Simone Biles, yes, I mean, her death-defying accomplishments in gymnastics, there's moves that no one else can do. But, you know, even Naomi Osaka has talked about mental illness and how she doesn't want to play, and she doesn't want to play. So, you know, I just know growing up, and don't get me wrong, I have no idea the pressure that Olympic athletes are under, but I did work in news for a long time, and there were definitely situations where I didn't want to be in them. I didn't want to cover the story. I didn't want to put myself in danger, but I felt that that was my job, and that's what it is. Like, these are the moments that, you know, I got into this business for. This is when you have to show what you're made of. And I do think that when you hear people saying, oh, it's so brave to not play, it's so brave to not compete, are you happy to see that kind of change?
You know, Lauren, I just wanted to add to that, the social media, the difference when Donna and Terry were competing.
No social media.
They didn't have that social media pressure and all of that. So how does that figure into what you're asking now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that the pressure really comes from within. So, you know, an athlete can choose not to be looking at social media when they're competing and listening to comments. No one is forcing someone to look on social media every day. So I think the pressure is really, I think, so much more intrinsic than extrinsic. And so, you know, we were obviously a tiny little sport, so we didn't have we weren't on CNN and ESPN and all that. But I do think that we still felt an enormous amount of pressure because it was our one chance to shine, you know, on a world stage. And so I think that every athlete feels pressure, whether they're looking at the social media or not. But I think the pressure is really deep down inside because you want to succeed. You want to show that these last 4 years have been
worth it,
and the effort and the money. And so I think the pressure would be there regardless. But I think, you know, I don't think there's an equivalency between Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles. I think Naomi Osaka, it wasn't that she didn't want to play. She didn't want to do the interviews, right?
Right.
And as a professional tennis player, that is her job to do the part that the French Open required of her, which is do the post-match interviews. So I think that kind of like the pot, you know, you sign up to not smoke marijuana before an event, and if you you know, so you have to follow the rules. And I think the rules of playing in the French Open is you have to do the post-match interviews. Simone Biles, I think, is a different situation. She's not at the Olympics as a professional athlete. She's there as well. She's competing. I guess the amateur professional distinction is no longer there, but she's competing for the medal. She's not. It's not her job.
I see.
And if she felt she wasn't safe, that she mentally wasn't able to do the competition safely, to me, that's the right choice.
Gotcha.
But
isn't
it possible that maybe she didn't do as well as she has in the past because she has been amazing and incredible, and maybe she just had a problem with not being that elite athlete and winning? Maybe she can't take defeat. And I'm not saying that's true, but I understand what you're saying, Donna. But I think you have to weigh that with if she had been doing incredibly well like she had in the past, this probably wouldn't have happened. So maybe it has to do with the pressure that she puts on herself, and maybe she's unable to deal with not being the elite athlete at the Olympics like she has been.
Right. You lose your confidence, and it might be very difficult to go on, especially when there's some danger involved, like, oh my God, what if I don't land this and I get hurt, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that momentum and confidence are huge, you know, in every sport, right? And maybe you're right, she lost the confidence, and then it was very difficult to come back from that, you know, in this 1 week period
before
the Olympics.
Yeah. We got to take a quick break. Got a few more minutes after the break to talk about a couple of other issues with the Olympics. You're listening to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I'm here with Lauren Savon. We're talking to former Olympians Thierry Humeau and Donna Chalotic. And we are almost out of time, but we would be remiss if we didn't talk, Lauren, about the whole pandemic situation and the Tokyo Olympics. The vaccination rate, I think they talked about perhaps about 100 out of the 613 U.S. athletes not being vaccinated. And you were just reading a story about how
the COVID bubble may be bursting. Cases are hitting a record level in Tokyo, and they're wondering if this bubble's going to hold, because it's not only the country, the city, record numbers of new infection here, and dozens of athletes have been sent into isolation. You know, obviously you guys didn't have to deal with anything like this back when you were at the Olympics, but what kind of cloud does this put over athletes? I mean, considering all the pressure we just discussed that they're under.
Well, I think the problem is that, you know, the vaccine has been available to American citizens for quite a while, but, you know, there's over 200 countries participating to the games, and I could see being vaccinated being a real issue for some athletes, you know, from smaller countries. So maybe, you know, in one way, I would say, yes, you know, they should have, you know, have all the athletes vaccinated. But I don't know if it was doable because of the distribution of the vaccine.
And what about the political issue as well? I'm sure there are a lot of athletes who are choosing not to be vaccinated. Donna, how do you deal with that? You're training athletes all the time.
Again, you know, we're kayaking outdoors, but we're in an area with very high vaccination rates. Our county is at one point was the highest vaccination rate in the country.
Mm. Wow.
So in this area, people listen to science, and, you know, general, I don't know anyone that isn't vaccinated.
Yeah.
So, but again, I think what my husband was saying is, you know, when you're from a country that hasn't been able to get the vaccine, it's pretty difficult to put
right.
athletes ahead of healthcare workers or people that are vulnerable to get vaccinated when there's very little vaccine to go around. So I think it was a very difficult situation for Tokyo.
And what do you see as the games continue? Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball, but is it tainting the games? And when you look at some of the sports, we can maybe expect that some of top athletes may not be able to compete if they've been in contact with someone who's tested positive.
Absolutely. We may see some athletes having to sit it out. We're already seeing that. And so it will be a slightly less complete Olympic Games than we would have had pre-COVID or no COVID. That's a shame. The bright side is here that we're only 3 years away from the next Olympics.
Right.
That's a great point.
Going to be a little bit shorter.
That's yeah. funny. You know, we only have a couple minutes left. Let's try to turn it to more of a positive spin. First, you, Terry, what are you looking forward to in the next
Which events are you guys watching?
That we should take note of. And you can certainly talk about canoeing and kayaking.
Yeah, we're right in the middle of four sport now. So we've been watching the races, and you know, it's kind of fun because the kids who are winning the medals now are the kids of many of the kids are kids of people we used to compete.
Oh yeah. Wow, yeah, you know? Of course.
So, you know, we're an international couple in the sport, but there are quite a few other couples, and so it's kind of it's fun to watch the game, and because we know the names and we know the families and stuff like this. So you know, it's we're enjoying watching it.
Donna, what are you looking forward to other than what Terry says regarding some of the other events at the Olympics?
Well, I'm quite pleased that, you know, even with Simone Biles retiring, that we have an American gold medalist in the all-around. Mm-hmm. Shows the depth of our program. So I think the...
Wait a second, Donna. You're talking 3 hours behind where you are, and we have to say you're in the Washington area. The folks who are driving home right now to turn on the Olympics at 8 o'clock in L.A. don't know the results. So, spoiler, I'm kidding. Go ahead. Oh, Terry, are you still there?
Yeah.
We lost Donna. What Uh-oh. Happened? Does that happen when you criticize your wife? She just drops off.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but no, we're looking forward to the rest of the games, and I personally like track and field. You know, I'll be watching some track and field.
That's Alan's favorite
too. 13 hours ahead of us, and you know, the game on television in the States, it's a little bit different than everywhere in the world. I mean, it's a show here, and the events are edited and stuff like this. So it's hard to see it in a raw, form, but we got the technical solutions for that.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And maybe in some of your TV and film production in your present career, you can figure out how we can be more up to date, given the fact that there's such a delay.
Hey, I have Donna here. She can give you the final word.
Okay, we're going to get the final word from Donna. That is a good husband, Terry. Mm-hmm. I have to say, the final word goes to Donna. Sorry you dropped off there.
Yeah, it disconnected. I'd also say the other thing that's really exciting that you can stream your favorite sports now and see everything live. And I feel like what a progress we've made in being able to watch the Olympics. You can watch, you know, beginning to end, whatever sport you want. So I'd also like to encourage people to stream the sports and not just watch the finals on the evening NBC program.
So that's right.
That's really exciting that we can see the sports more in depth, the ones that interest us.
That is an excellent point, and we appreciate you making that. Terry and Don, it's been a real honor and a privilege to have you, and we appreciate all of your comments. Enjoy the rest of the Olympics.
We'll be watching.
Okay, thanks for having us on the show.
Okay,
thank
anytime.
You for having us. It was fun.
That was fun. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's LATLC. You don't want to miss it. Lisa Zanville. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yes, and I am a believer, Lauren, in LATLC. That's Los Angeles Trial Lawyers Charities. I've been involved with them for some years, and they do incredible work. They give lawyers a great name. The charity work that lawyers in this city do is unbelievable, and these are trial lawyers for the people, not the scummy defense attorneys. I'm sorry. LATLC makes such a great difference in people's life, positive influence in the quality of life of so many homeless. They deal with homelessness, survivors of abuse, persons with disabilities, children, education, and they provide financial assistance and volunteer services, and they have an incredible event coming up. They're celebrating 15 years of service to the community, and we are privileged and honored to have with us today Lisa Zanville, who's the executive director of LATLC, Los Angeles Trial Lawyers Charities, and she's been doing that since 2016. Lisa, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Thank you very much, and thank you so much for being such a strong supporter of LATLC. We really appreciate it, and you make a difference in our lives and the lives of people in our community. So thank you.
Well, the work that LATLC does is just incredible, and people really need to know about it because it's all through the city and helping so many people. You can go to LATLC.org to see all the wonderful people like Lisa who are doing such great work, and a lot of lawyers who are so busy volunteering their time to make this such a successful venture. Tell us, Lisa, about the summer soiree, something I'm really excited about that I've been going to for many years.
Is it a soiree or a soiree, Lisa?
Soiree.
I'm Canadian. We call it a soiree. I say things very differently in Canada. Soiree. Okay, I just became an American. Come on, Lisa, tell us what we can expect at the Hotel Intercontinental on August 14th.
Well, in the past, we've had a casino night and a poker tournament, but with everything going on in the world, with COVID and also celebrating our 15th anniversary, we decided to shift the focus of the evening to our partner charities. We call this a party with a purpose. Every element of the evening will be connected to one of our partner charities, and we have 100 of them. So it's going to be a fabulous night. Not only will we have a great dance band and great food, great music, and all kinds of activities, each one of those activities will be connected to a partner charity. For example, the dance band, which is a regular dance band, and you've been to it, Alan,
yeah,
so you know that we have great music.
Amazing.
But it's connected to one of our partners, which is Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation, which what they do is provide musical instruments for low-income schools throughout the community. And then we have a dance floor that is connected to our Ability First, which is a special needs organization that helps. It has a dance program. So you will learn as well as have a great time. We're tired of having, you know, a formal program and speakers. I think everybody's tired of that.
Yeah.
So we decided that the entire event is going to become the program, so to speak. So you can walk around and participate in some activities. For example, one of my favorites is you will walk blindfolded with a guide dog of America so that you can really get a feel for how wonderful these animals are.
Wow.
We also will have a great trike race. We have every year, we give about 15 to 20 adaptive bicycles through a group called SoCal Trikers. And so there is going to be a race where you will push one of these tricycles down a track, and the winner will receive one of our stuffed hearts called Lovey. And so there are all kinds of activities that we will be having, but everything will be connected to our partner charities. Even the gift bag items will either be related to one of our partners or will be produced by one of our partners. For example, we have a place called Home that in South Central Los Angeles, they have an actual enterprise to teach young people about business. and they actually will be creating bath products like bath bomb and soap and things like that that they sell, and that will be part of our gift bag items.
You know, Lisa,
but it's going to be a great night.
It's going to be a great night, an amazing night. And you just said something that just was very important to me. When you were talking about the trike race, you talked about the stuffed hearts and the loveys that the winner will get. I have a stuffed heart lovey in my office. And I will tell you, and this is the truth, being a lawyer, a trial lawyer, can be very frustrating. A lot of obstacles, a lot of problems. I get frustrated in my office, and I actually look at the lovey that's sitting on the credenza across the way from me, and it reminds me what life is all about and giving back to the community, and it always brings me to a good place when I look at that lovey. And
absolutely. Absolutely. The lovey we've given out about 6,000 of them to children and adults throughout the community. And did you know that LATLC not only gives grants every year, we also do volunteer projects. And did you know that volunteering reduces stress? So this year we're also giving away stress hearts in the shape of hearts, because we want people to know that volunteering helps you mentally as well as helping others in the community.
You know, Lauren,
I agree.
You were asking before the show, how can you go? Because you really support this kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And Lauren Savon, who is well-known on radio and in TV, I think you can really see how important these charitable ventures are, especially for lawyers.
Yes. I noticed that you talk about your show as being an intersection of life and law. And that really is, because our motto is justice in the courtroom, service in the community. Because the attorneys that work with us, that are part of this organization, really give back through their work and through their time. Whether it was last week we had a tournament, a 3-on-3 basketball tournament with 16 teams, and we raised $50,000.
Wow.
For the Great Trike giveaway for these bicycles. And then the week before that, we had a whole group of people that were planting, painting, and mulching at Vista Del Mar. So it's whether they do it on a small scale or a large scale, it's giving back to our community. And it's so important mentally and physically.
Lisa, we only have a couple more minutes. Tell everyone how, first of all, lawyers can get involved if they're not, because a lot of them, I know the 3-on-3 basketball was a huge success, and I talked to some of the lawyers who participated, and they're so competitive. They had such a great time. But how can lawyers get involved? Because we have a lot of lawyers who listen to the show. And also, are these events open to the public? And if so, for instance, how would people get tickets for Summer Soiree?
Everything is open to the public as well as to attorneys. Of course, we were started 15 years ago by a handful of plaintiff attorneys, but it has grown to about 3,000 supporters on a regular basis. You can volunteer with us. Anyone can volunteer by going to our website, which is LATLC.org, and you can see that there's a volunteer button, and we keep our monthly events listed so that you can sign up and volunteer, whether it's painting or gardening or coming to the Great Trike giveaway in September. And then for the event, of course, it's open to everybody. And again, you can go to our website, LATLC.org, and on the homepage, there's a button, and you can just purchase tickets at from our website.
Easy as that.
And you can also, go ahead.
No, go on.
We have 30 seconds.
Our phone number is 844-44-LATLC if you have any questions.
And Lisa, you're the greatest. So if anyone has any questions, Lisa will be happy to answer your questions and get you involved or get you to the summer soiree. It sounds like it's going to be.
What's the dress code?
What's the dress code?
Oh, the dress code is cocktails. You can still push a tricycle in a cocktail outfit.
Yes, you can. Lisa, thanks so much. You do an amazing job, and thanks for being with us. And we're going to wish you all the best for the summer soiree and every other event that LATLC hosts.
Thank you.
Well, it's great listening to you. Lauren, it's always great listening to
you. Alan, always a pleasure.
All right, we got to go.
We got
to
go.
Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law.